The Darling of the Slums. "Morning, Your Grace," said Leo, stepping out onto the balcony.
"Morning, Your Grace," said Savine, as he sat opposite her at the breakfast table and gingerly stretched out his leg.
She shifted subtly, trying not to let her own discomfort show. A comfortable corset really isn't doing its job, but her belly was most definitely starting to swell. Savine had been softening all over since she gave up fencing. Gripping a sword made her think too much of Valbec, scrabbling with the hilt in a sweaty panic as she tried to pull up that loose board, men screaming for her blood outside the door.
"So,"
Leo frowned out towards the middle way, where the morning's traffic was already busy, then gave a helpless little laugh.
"We're married, then?"
Savine banished the ugly memories and held up the new ring she had commissioned, its satisfyingly colossal stone flashing in the morning sun.
"So it would appear."
"What happens now?"
"I recommend the trout."
"And then?"
"Give me and Zuri a week here to put my affairs in order, and then to Angland."
"Where you can put my affairs in order."
"Where I can help you put them in order."
And people might care less about appearances, and Zuri would not have to haul quite so savagely on the laces.
"Probably best that we leave before Wetterlant's hanging."
"I might hold off on saying sorry to His Majesty as well." Savine winced.
"I hope my history with the king will not—"
"If he's fool enough to let the most beautiful woman in the Union slip through his fingers, then I pity him." And Leo gave her that big boyish smile, the one that made a faint groove from the scar on his cheek. She found she was smiling back, and not even having to pretend.
"That's a rather lovely thing to say."
"Don't get used to it." He scooped a piece of trout onto his plate, then sucked the fork. "I'm not much of a flatterer."
"Oh, I think you could prosper at anything you put your mind to."
He smiled even wider.
"That's a rather lovely thing to say."
"I'm one of the best flatterers in the Union. Ask anyone." He laughed and started eating, and she rather enjoyed watching him. So strong and healthy and handsome. No sign of last night's anger now. Except perhaps a faint pink graze her open hand had left on his cheek. The young lion had his moods, but it seemed they passed quickly, like storm clouds sweeping over the rugged northern valleys, and just as quickly letting the sun shine again. She could work with that. Who doesn't have moods after all? Savine had been in one ever since she got back from Valbec. Haroon had to squeeze his great shoulders together to fit through the door onto the balcony.
"Spillian Swarbrek is here, Lady Savine."
A few months in Adua, and he had barely any accent at all. "Thank you, Haroon, you're a treasure. Send him out." Leo frowned after him.
"Not sure how your servants will go down in Angland."
"Angland will just have to get used to them. Haroon and Rabik are Zuri's brothers, and they're some of the most diligent, conscientious, trustworthy people I know. Haroon used to be an officer in the Emperor's army, I believe, and Rabik's an absolute magus with horses. As for Zuri..."
She was Savine's closest friend, and the very thought of her being unwelcome somewhere made her want to grind that place under her heel.
"She is indispensable. My business interests would suffer more without her than without me. I would trust her with our lives."
Leo prodded at his fish.
"Just feels like there are too many brown faces around in Adua these days."
"Too many for what? The people who come here are hard workers. They bring wealth and energy and new ideas. There are great thinkers among them, great engineers. And how would you stop them anyway? Make us less prosperous?"
Leo did not look convinced. He was not a man much moved by reason.
"We fought a war against the Gurkish," he grumbled.
"You fought a war against the Northmen. Some of your best friends are still Northmen."
He actually looked slightly offended.
"Not all Northmen are the same, you know."
There was a snapping of cloth, and Swarbrek swept onto the balcony, became briefly entangled in the drapes, but manfully fought his way free. He was fresh from another trip to the far country, and was affecting the facial hair of a fearless adventurer.
Your Grace,
he intoned, giving Savine a flourishing bow.
You look a veritable goddess, as always.
Master Swarbrick, how was your latest escapade in the unsettled West?
Wild and packed with danger. I have tales to tell which the pampered citizens of Adjo will scarcely credit.
Savine certainly would not credit them, for she had it on good authority that he rarely strayed far from the harbour at Rostod and paid a scout to wear his clothes while riding across the plains so they would have an authentically adventured-in appearance on his return. And may I introduce my husband, Leo Danbrock?
Your Grace,
Swarbrick gave an even more flourishing bow.
An absolute honour to make the acquaintance of the hero of Red Hill and conqueror of the Great Wolf.
I don't like to talk about that,
said Leo sternly. Swarbrick blinked, mouth slightly open. Leo burst out laughing.
It's all I'd bloody talk about if I had my way.
And he seized Swarbrick's hand and nearly dragged the hapless writer off the balcony with the vigour of his shaking.
I think I visited your office once.
Swarbrick must have guessed what they had used his office for, but to his credit he gave no sign of it.
My humble premises are forever at your disposal, as is my humble pen.
I have a use in mind for the latter. And Savine nudged a chair out with one shoe so Swarbrick could sit. The name Glockter carries something of a stigma.
A proud name, but I see your Grace's point. There is a flavour of torture?
Swarbrick gave an apologetic smile.
The name Brock has entirely different connotations. Heroism, patriotism, derring do. Have you considered a biography, by the way, Your Grace?
Leo paused with fork halfway to his mouth.
I'm 22 years old. I hope I've a few achievements still to come. Your famous victories thus far are, one cannot doubt, but a prelude, but there would be great public interest even in a first volume or two.
My name, Savine reminded him.
Of course, my apologies. New ideas erupt and must be thrust aside. A curse of the artistic temperament.
Far from the only one, in her opinion. Savine Danglockter was a woman of business, she explained. She needed a reputation for cunning, ruthlessness, and flinty resolve.
She needed the confidence of investors, the respect of partners, the awe of debtors,
mused Swarbrick.
But Savine Danbrock, Lady Governor of Angland, might be a woman of the people? A woman who balances wisdom with warmth and generosity? A woman who struggles tirelessly for the common good?
Kernsbeck was always saying that he suspected Savine of hiding a generous heart. Perhaps the time had come to put it on public display. What do you think about a series of pamphlets discussing my charitable work in the Three Farms? Nothing too obvious, you understand.
I am all in the subtext.
Swarbrick sat back, considering the trees in the garden as though their branches were laden with weighty revelations.
It would help if we could find our way to a place of honesty. I hope you will not think me indelicate if I suggest we might make use of your experiences during the uprising in Valbeck.
Savine felt a sick surge of fear, then a sting of annoyance at her own weakness. All it took was a mention of the place to set her heart thumping and turn her mouth sour to send that tickling shiver up her back. A voice came strangled.
How do you mean? You lived among the common folk there.
The broad's cramped apartment, her bed of rags, the cries echoing through the blistering walls.
Their daily trials were yours.
Up to her knees in the cold river, throat raw from smoke, endlessly filling buckets to put out fires that could not be put out.
The hunger,
queuing for vegetable peelings and grateful to get them.
The danger.
The sound of the gangs outside, the screams in the night.
The daily want.
Her wheezing breath as she dragged herself through the machinery, blood spattering the floor.
Of course,
she barked, knuckles white as she gripped at the edge of the table.
A place of honesty.
If Swarbrick could spin diamonds out of shit, good luck to him. Where the hell had she put her pearl dust? A story of personal growth, the writer was musing, of dangers faced and trials braved. A woman born to privilege, coming through the fire of struggle to understand the plight of the common man. He took a self-satisfied breath. Powerful. Are you aware of Carmé Groom? She did some sketches for My Life of Dab Sweet, one of the best artists in Adur, but she is not in the greatest demand because she is a she. Indeed. A few etchings can truly make a pamphlet sing. Words are powerful, but an image can shortcut the reason and speak directly in the language of the heart. Savine snapped her fingers. Done. We can visit the three farms this afternoon. Once she and Zuri had calculated the precise minimum a reputation for charity could be bought for. Then I shall make the arrangements at once, said Swarbrick, springing up. Your Grace? Your Grace? Do think about that biography. And he ducked back through the window. So, that's the famous writer? Asked Leo. He has some of the bravest facial hair I've ever seen. Despite being one of the biggest cowards in the Union. I suppose if he was brave, he wouldn't need such brave facial hair. And if everyone was brave, what would make you special? Well, he gave her that grin again, I am married to the cleverest woman in the Union. Stop, she said, smiling as she leaned towards him. By which I mean don't. I won't. But pamphlets? Absolutely. Etchings? The language of the heart. Do you really think people are that stupid? Darling, she leaned closer and kissed him gently and touched him lightly on the tip of his nose with her fingertip. People are far more stupid than that. The city closed in around them and, like a rake falling into a life of debauchery, turned mean, twisted, sick and dirty. High above, so high that it seemed no one could ever reach it, a narrow crack of sky showed between the crumbling tenements. And so we pass into the three farms, Swarbrick spoke in an urgent whisper, scribbling away in his notebook. Perhaps the most infamous of Adua's districts, once largely burned, then brutally occupied by the savage Gurkish, now rendered into an endless night. No, a perpetual dusk by the smoke of the manufactories, and a moral murk even more complete in which... What? In which the light of hope is extinguished for its thousands of wretched inhabitants. Can I find a place for the word crepuscular, do you think? I tried to find a place for it in every sentence, said Carmé Groom, her fair brows raised very high. Not much of a reader myself, said Leo, leaning close, but he sounds a bit overwrought. Savine shrugged. That's what people consider good writing these days. He nodded towards a pair of ragged boys shoveling horse dung onto a rotting wagon. What are they doing? Making a living. Out of shit? All you need is a shovel and a poor sense of smell. Savine made an utterly futile effort to wriggle some room into her overtight collar. And good senses of smell don't last long around here.
Stay close, your graces.
Broad went with fists clenched, frowning into the shadows. Shadows were one of the few things there was no shortage of in the three farms. In some of the narrower lanes, you would hardly have known it was day.
This is no place for wealthy folk to walk alone, nor writers and artists neither.
Never fear, called out Swarbrick. I learned well the value of a stout escort out in the wilds.
Where did you find your man Broad? Murmured Leo. In Valbeck. He and his family took me in. I've no doubt they saved my life.
So you took them in?
Leo was grinning at her.
You do have a heart.
A generous one, according to my friend Kernsbeck. But settling one's debts is simply good business, and the Broads are all useful people.
No doubt.
That's a ladder man's tattoo on his hand, you know. First men onto the walls in a siege. Most deadly duty in the whole army. And 4 stars means he did it 4 times.
Leo glanced sideways at Broad.
That is a dangerous man.
Savine remembered him facing down 6 burners that first night in Valbec and stomping their leader's head into the cobbles. The fear she had felt and the relief.
Calm, Savine whispered under her breath. Calm, calm, calm.
We live these days in a segregated society, Swarbrick was burbling, nudging up his eye lenses with the end of his pencil. A stratified world, where rich and poor rarely mingle. No, wait, mingle is weak.
They passed under the great chimney of a salt works, walls black with crusted soot. Flies buzzed around a dead horse. 3 ragged children played in the gutter. Every other building here was a jerry shop. Everyone at least halfway drunk, or so ill they looked drunk. Most of the rest were pawn shops, sad little fragments of broken lives priced low in their grubby windows.
The gap between rich and poor has never been wider. The chasm has never yawned so deep. But one woman dares to bridge the divide.
Swarbrick gave a delighted cackle.
Bridge the divide, that's lovely. She, like few others among the wealthy and noble, goes forth among the people. She, like few others, understands their plight.
Savine did understand it, but if she truly went to a place of honesty, all she really felt was glad she was no longer one of these wretched ghosts. All she really wanted was to get back to her palatial rooms and her conscientious servants as soon as possible. That familiar smell of sweat, piss, damp and rot, mixed with the acrid scratch of the furnaces, was hard to ignore as they worked their way deeper into the gloomy maze of streets. Strange how smells can bring memories back so sharply. She realized she had her box of pearl dust in her hand, forced herself to push it back up her sleeve. She was free. She was safe. She told herself so over and over.
Calm. Calm, calm.
These buildings. Leo gazed up at the slumping offences against architecture, crowding over them, blooms of green damp flaring from their leaking gutters. The land is short-leased, so it isn't worth the landlord's while to build well or to repair what's built badly. The houses fall apart with the families inside. Who would know better than Savine? She owned dozens of similar buildings herself.
Why no window frames?
The tenants tear them out in the cold months and burn them for firewood.
By the dead.
Behind them, Swarbrick scratched on in his notebook. We speak, of course, of none other than Her Grace, and grace is the right word, dear friends. Savine Danbrock, wife to the young lion.
Bride, maybe?
Bride is youthful,
said Carmi Groom, plucking out one of the pencils shoved through her shambolic bun and causing half of it to collapse across her face.
Bride bursts with potential.
Bride of the young lion and the new Lady Governor of Angland.
They had made it to the very heart of the slum, an unpaved square with stagnant water gathered in puddles, thick with scum and blooms of multicoloured oil. A strange building stood at one side, an ancient low house with a sagging, moss-covered roof.
"What is that?" asked Leo.
"One of the 3 farms," said Savine, "that stood here before the city swallowed them.
Hard to imagine anything ever grew here."
One pig screamed at another as they fought in a mound of filth. Someone shouted drunken abuse in a tongue she did not recognize. A cheap flute tooted hopelessly, blending with the mindless music of steam hammers in a foundry across the way. Zuri waited with Haroon and Rabik and 2 of Broad's men. She had gathered a queue of the most wretched, a lot of dark faces among them. Refugees from the collapse of the Empire of Gurkle, seeking safety and sanity and finding little of either.
Thank you, Zuri.
Savine swallowed her nausea. You've done a miraculous job, as always. I fear there are no miracles down here. Zuri frowned towards the procession of the desperate. It reminded Savine of the queues she had stood in for one of the few working pumps in Valbeck. The long walk back with the heavy buckets bruising her calves, water slopping at her legs, the unbearable aching in her shoulders with every step. Calm, calm, fucking calm. Rabik watchfully held her purse while she took coins from it and pressed them into filthy, calloused, broken hands. Hands missing fingers and thumbs from mishaps at machinery. Hands of beggars, children, whores and thieves. With Haroon's help, Leo was handing out loaves from a cart, clapping people on the back, shaking his head at their thanks, throwing open his brimming heart and spraying well wishes. Savine said nothing. She was worried if she opened her mouth she might drown the neighbourhood in spew. As Lady Brock moves through those darkened streets, it is as if a lamp shines. No, a beacon, lighting the way to a better life for these neglected unfortunates, as if the sun breaks through the smoke of the manufactories. She gives out bread, yes. She gives out comfort, surely. She gives out silver with an open hand. But more valuable than all, she gives out hope.
Very nice, murmured Carmi Groom, eyes flickering over the scene as she pinned her hair back up with a clip from her drawing board and began to sketch.
Isn't it? Said Swarbrick.
All shrouded in secrecy, though, we must make that point. We have stumbled upon her anonymous generosity. She would blush to hear it spoken of, for she is the personification of humility. Or modesty? Modesty or humility? Why not both?
Is this what Valbeck was like? Leo muttered at Savine.
Before the uprising, maybe. Then it got worse. We picked through the dung heaps for something we could eat. What can we do for them? I should have brought my purse. Never used the bloody thing.
He really did have a big heart. It made her strangely glad to know that someone did. A big heart, but not the biggest brain. Help to these people was a coin tossed in a pool. It might make a few ripples, but they would quickly vanish as though they had never been. The bread would be gone in one swallow. The money would be wasted on drink and husk, a moment of sweet oblivion. Perhaps, at best, some tatty heirloom temporarily reclaimed from the pawn shop.
Who, on account of her charity, no, selflessness, on account of her remarkable charity and selflessness, has become known among the common folk of Adua as...
A little urchin with a scabby rash across her face gazed up as Savine pressed a coin into her palm. She felt crushed, like a swineherd being smothered by hungry pigs.
"Do you need much more?" she snapped. "Almost there," said Carmi Groom, freckled face wrinkled with concentration as she drew.
"Benefactor?" mused Swarbrick. "The benefactor of the three farms? Too cold."
Savine flinched at a shower of sparks from an open shed door. She felt trapped in this stinking gloom. She felt almost as trapped as she had in Valbeck. She had to get out.
The saint? Swarbrick raised his brows high. Of the hovels?
Too religious. We're not in Gurkle.
No, we are very much in the slums of Adua.
That girl with the rashy face had caught Savine's skirts, clutching at the only kindness that had ever been shown her, perhaps, no matter how much of a sham it was. Leo was watching with tears in his eyes. If they stayed much longer, he would probably adopt the little limpet. Savine's greasy skin was crawling. She wanted nothing more than to kick the girl off into the gutter, forced herself, by a towering effort of will, to keep the smile nailed to her face as Rabik tried to gently peel her dirty hands away.
How about...
Carmi Groom narrowed her eyes at the scene, scratching thoughtfully at the side of her nose with her pencil.
The darling of the slums.
Oh, my dear!
Swarbrick looked up wide-eyed from Kami's paper to Savine, holding up his hands as though framing a painting with her as its subject, that desperate orphan clinging to her feet.
You should be a writer!